Welcome to Authors Matters, a podcast from the Authors Licensing and Collecting Society. I'm Caroline Sanderson, and I'm a writer and books journalist. In this episode of Authors Matters, we talk to Simon Ashdown. Simon is a British television writer, probably best known for his long-standing work on BBC's EastEnders. His other credits include the BAFTA-nominated Funland with Jeremy Dyson, and most recently, Our House, an ITV drama. Simon, welcome. So I believe that a teacher told you when you were 7 years old that you should be a writer.
How did you get this information? That is actually true, although I have no idea how you know that. That is actually true.
Amazing, yeah. What you can find online.
Yeah, I was really, really good at writing at school, and they said you should be a writer. And then at a certain point, like I think I was about 13, and then realised it wasn't that cool to be really enthusiastic, and then I kind of stopped. So up to that point, I was like, that's what I did, and I was really keen on it. I used to write plays all the time. But then I stopped for quite a long time, actually.
That's interesting that you used to write plays, because I guess that's the kind of precursor of TV drama in a way.
Well, yeah, we used to kind of like write plays with these friends. I lived on this little suburban street, you know, and we used to get together and write a play and then put a play on every summer for all the parents when we were little, that kind of thing, and school plays and things like that.
So in what circumstances did you pick it up again, and what was your route into writing for television?
Well, I suppose, I studied, did an English degree, and then I really got into photography, and I was really fascinated by the two things. So then, just to avoid going out into the world of work, I did a kind of MA for a year, which was about the relationship between visual art and literature, which is, again, the same thing. And then I thought I'm going to have a go at the photography. So I did that for a while, but I really missed the literary side of it. So in the end, I decided the only way to bring these two things together was really to, like, write stories and pictures, really, and make films. So I started off kind of wanting to kind of write and direct, as loads of people do, and just got involved making films and writing. And I mean, like, really super low budget, and worked on people's films, like, did all kinds of things, did kind of, like, sound and a bit of AD and camera operating for no money, just for experience. Made a couple of films. And then I kind of thought, actually, what I really, really liked is the writing process. I liked imagining it. I liked seeing the pictures. So then I actually did a kind of MA in screenwriting part-time just to kind of focus me. And the kind of learning aspect of it, which was not that great, because you're going to get taught lists of things like the 10 functions of dialogue and things like that. And really, I must have never, ever thought of it outside that class. But what was good is you were meeting people on the film course. I got involved writing other people's films. And then my final script, I don't know how she got hold of it. Tessa Ross got hold of it and asked me to come in and see her. And it was a really kind of crazy script. It was like a little bit like Funland, actually. It was like really bizarre. It was like four stories in one day in London, but quite dark and bizarre. And she said, I really, really like this script, but you're not going to get this made. It's too crazy. But get some experience on series and then get that on your book. Because I was making no money at all. And then literally the next week, I met this friend of mine who introduced me to the storyliner of EastEnders. And I just got chatting to her. And she said, we need a script editor. Do you want to come be a script editor? I said, well, no, I want to be a writer. I'm writing scripts. And she said, well, if you come and script edit for us for 6 months, we'll give you a script. So I went and did that. And actually, it was a really brilliant experience, because script editing for 6 months was like doing a three-year degree in it. It's just an underrated profession, I think, in TV, script editing. And of course, the heights of TV are full of people who start off as script editors. You know, almost the head of everything. Most people have done that. So it's a real starter job. There's some really interesting people you meet doing that. But you also understand what's involved and what notes mean, because you've been on that side of it. Because you're getting notes from various people, given to the script editor, they're given to the writers. So you kind of gives you a little advantage, actually, as a writer, because you've been inside. You kind of understand what that note means. If you're learning some code, and also you're just working on editing other writers, which, again, I wasn't very good at because I wanted to be a writer. It's not a particularly healthy thing to be a script editor. But you learn a lot because you work with people who aren't good. And people who are really, really good. You see really, and you're reading scripts all the time. And you see really clearly, like, the difference, because it's a chasm. The good writers are just a different kind of breed. Essentially, they're just better at storytelling. which is very often like not only the dialogue, it's just the ordering of the beats. That's almost the most distinctive thing, the way they decide to order the information through the script.
It's almost the nuts and bolts, isn't it? That's so fascinating as an apprenticeship and a way of learning about writing. And I know novelists sometimes talk about reading writers they admire and really, really studying it. So it's almost like that. It's the taking it apart and putting it back together again, really.
I mean, script editors work so hard, especially on a show like that. And no credit, really. So it's quite interesting to do that, I think. You know, they offered me this one script afterwards. And also when I went into it, to be honest, I had no interest in soap. I don't really watch it. I hadn't been interested in that. You know, I wanted to make Scorsese movies and things like that. But then working on it, I kind of got an understanding of actually what was really great about that show, which was that, and especially when you get back to the beginning of it and watch it, it was really brilliantly put together and brilliantly designed in terms of the families and the character conflicts and the way it looked and everything and the mass appeal of it and the grasp on, you know, the imagination of the public at that time. Even when I joined, it was still really massive. And that you could tell stories about people on an epic scale, but just the kind of ability to tell stories over a long period of time. It is like Victorian novel, really. It is like, yeah, it's cliche. It is like Dickens. It's like those serialised magazine stories and 19th century novels, like Thomas Hardy and Dickens and Hooks, lots of, you know, like chapters, like episode, and a real scale to it. And so once I got going on it, I kind of realised you could almost write your own stories through that show. As you write the story, for me, I find it very easy. You'd think of an episode, like a particular kind of episode. It might be like, I remember I did one which was like a kind of Ian Beale who loses everything. It was an episode that starts with him and the camera just follows him for 30 minutes. It doesn't cut from him. And he's just trying to raise this money and he's got 30 minutes to raise it. And at the end, he's begging film and he says no and he loses it. You'd be writing that story about, say, a year-long story about Ian's decline. And as you're doing it, you'd suddenly get ideas for episodes. So you could pick a character you're generally interested in and a theme that would interest you anyway if you were writing your own stories. So even if I was writing my own screenplay, I'd probably be interested in investigating this theme. And then you can kind of pair them with other characters that you like. Because to be honest, there are shows within shows on a show like that. You know, there's like, there are better actors and better characters and better locations and certain sets look better and different times of the day. So you can kind of paint your own stories. And then you can write a two-year story. And then you know that's going to play over 2 years and you know what the ending is. So you can build a story of 2 years, maybe about a character that an audience have known and loved for 10 years or 15 years. So I kind of discovered it while I was working on it. I thought, this is actually kind of really interesting. And so then I started writing stories and then the stories got... You used to have to kind of write stories and then get pitched, conference, and then you get a tick or yes or no. And if it's a yes, then you... And if you've done this, you can probably write the episodes from the story. So that's what I did. And I kind of did that for most of the time on EastEnders until I was a series consultant when I was more over the whole show.
I like that analogy with the Dickensian novel as well. That's fascinating. And I don't know, I suppose there aren't many writing gigs where you get to really inhabit characters for that length of time and become so kind of close and involved with who they really are, I suppose. It's a fascinating challenge for a writer.
As I say, it's like, you know, there are negative aspects of a show like that and positive. Not every actor is the same quality. Some are great, but there are some that are really exceptional. So if you're writing a story for them, or even you can create a family and bring in characters and maybe be involved a bit with the casting and try and get people in there. I mean, you have to do all kinds of other things. Like you're servicing, in the end, you're servicing a great beast. You know, it's not just your episode. You've got to like pick up the baton, you've got to carry on the baton. And you can help influence that if you're writing stories. But you also got lots of other things going on, lots of other stories. So it's a complex thing. And there's, you know, there's limits on availability and like sets and how much you can do outside. So you're always weaving around these things. And at the end of the day, you've got to get everyone else on board. The executive producer's got to be enthusiastic. Yeah, it's a complicated thing. Yeah, I think that you don't have to do genre as well. So you're not like doing a story of the week or a thriller genre. It can just be about character.
It's fascinating what happens when you don't typecast yourself as a writer, when you don't think that's what I want to do and that's all I'll do. The fact that you almost find what you're, you know, what you're good at and what your strengths are and what you enjoy doing by just taking those opportunities and seeing what's happened.
That's very true. And I think some things, it might just be me, I think some things just aren't such a good fit. You know, I mean, some other kind of shows, like when I was doing that, it took off quite quickly, and then you get offered a lot of work then suddenly because your episodes are going out and they get noticed, and you suddenly, and then it's about choosing what to do. And you make mistakes on the way with that, you know, because you do things for the wrong reasons. But there are some genres or some types of show that actually just don't really suit you. You kind of think, oh, you can be a chameleon, you can write for this show and that show. And that is true to some extent. Like, I've literally just written 3 episodes of the new series of Trigger Point, which is not my kind of natural genre. But actually, it was, like, really interesting and quite exciting to do it because it was so different. And then, obviously, they wanted me to do it to bring a bit of what I do, which is maybe a bit more of the emotional stories into it. At the end of the day, you kind of can only write what you can write. And when you start trying to adopt another voice entirely, another... doesn't really work for me. Yeah, I mean, you can adopt a voice of characters, but you've almost got to write it how you write naturally, because that's what's going to be good. And if you try and fake it up, I just don't think it works. And there is a real pressure on writers, especially new writers in television, I think, to, you know, they come into the process, it's quite pressured. You've got producers, which are very strong characters sometimes, who are telling you this and they want this and giving notes. And I think it's easy for writers to back off from their own voice quite quickly and just try and keep the gig, you know, and keep everyone happy and just do what they're told. And it's dangerous. I think that's one of the key things about being a writer in television, is that balance between, like, making your own script and doing it the way you want to do it and retaining your voice and working with other people and giving them what they want as well. It's a real trick to it, because I don't think deep down most of producers want someone who's just going to come in and say yes. They might at moments, but really what they want is a really good writer who's going to understand what they want and embrace it their own way.
It's a real balance to strike, isn't it? Between, yeah, as yes, you playing to your strengths, knowing what you're good at, knowing when you need to insist on something or you need to stand your ground, and then the whole collaborative process, which we associate with writing for television.
Yeah, absolutely key. Because as soon as you... someone told me this. They took these notes from someone that were quite aggressive, delivered. They thought, I'm just going to give them what they want. Did all the notes. And then they gave it back in. They say, why have you done this? And you say, well, you told me to do it. And it's, well, did you want to do it? Well, not really. Why did you... It's kind of... you told me to do it. It's not a good enough reason. They're not paying you to do that. You know, you've got to own it. Because at the end of the day, the only person that knows that script completely intimately is you. The most satisfying experiences I've had is when I've been an EP on it as well. Right? And then what you realise from that is that, like, every single aspect of it is a form of writing. Our House, which we did last year, I was an EP on. I was, you know, and I was there through every
EP
stage of it.
Executive producer. Yeah.
And you're there through every stage of it, every aspect of it, right down to the edit and the sound mix and the grade. But actually, all of those things are part of writing. Like, we were looking at the last shot of it, and the colour of the grade of the light coming through the window really changed the tone of the ending, whether it was really, really warm and quite icy. And it actually, if you're writing a novel, that would be described and would actually convey emotionally to the reader what you're trying to say. Actually, I was sitting there thinking, this is just writing still. It's the same thing.
So what are the things that you would say have really helped you develop your career? What's helped you along the way? And what are the biggest challenges that you've had to face? And that could be something as basic as just having to earn a living.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the challenges, I think it is... I mean, there is that kind of imperative to earn a living. So there is a kind of constant pressure, I suppose. And there is no guarantee at all. So I suppose sometimes you will do things that you're not 100% about because you're doing it for that reason, and that's fine. I think there is a kind of choosing what to do is a challenge. There's kind of lots of pitfalls. I think you can do things for the wrong reason. You know, flattery is a currency that a lot of people use. a lot of people get kind of seduced into doing things. Because if you're being told by someone, oh my God, you're a genius, we really want you to write the show, it'd be quite seductive. But you can say it to anyone, it doesn't cost any money to say it. And also, you may look at the show and think, oh, that could be really good for my career, which is maybe true, but that isn't necessarily going to end up in a good script or a good show. And I think there are lots of seductions, you know, reasons to do things, which actually, in my experience, actually don't usually end that well. I think it's better to, if you can, to kind of really almost have a mental checklist, like, does this show really, really speak to me in some way? Is there something that instinctively I'm really drawn to it? Or is some deep instinct that tells me this doesn't feel quite right? You don't have to act on these, but it's that. And then the people I'm working with, do I have a real connection with them? And then do I really like their work? Honestly, ask that question. Because again, it's like very tempting. If someone offering you some money and telling you you're great and you've got bills coming in, it's just to leap into it. And then does it stand a good chance of being made? It's not the most important one, but it's worth just really honestly asking those questions. If you then afterwards, if the answers are no, you can still do it if you want to, but you need to be forewarned, you know, because I think usually if the answers are kind of yes to those, at least two of those three, they're much more likely to get green light and get made. Because otherwise it just doesn't, at some point, it just doesn't quite work. Either it doesn't really fit or the person you're working with, you realise you don't really have a great connection with, which does affect the work. Or, and if you've seen their other work, I mean, someone was telling me the other day, they had a show which was a pilot, made as a pilot for America, and they took on this director. In the end, the main reason it didn't get taken up a series was the director. And yet when they'd first looked at directors, they hadn't really liked the other work, but there was a real buzz about them. So they kind of ignored the fact they didn't really like the work because it was a real buzz and the studio wanted them and they went for it. But actually, the thing they didn't like about their work is exactly what they got. I think one of the challenges is kind of just being aware of the seductions and pitfalls and just trying to navigate them. And sometimes, you know, you just need to do things anyway. But
I guess mistakes have to be made along the way because that's all about finding out. It's striking the idea of trusting your gut instinct as a writer, I think, because we're all so hungry for work most of the
exactly.
time.
Exactly, yeah.
It's very hard to say no to things, isn't
yeah.
it? Especially if you feel wanted. But trusting your gut instinct, I think, is a very good...
I'm not saying it's easy. I would say a lot of times I haven't done it or I've made mistakes, definitely. But I think there's that. And then I think also it's like, how do you negotiate? Like, when do you make a stand and how do you make a stand? And I think kind of developing a knack of being quietly insistent and arguing your case and holding your position, but trying to avoid like a full-on conflict battle is an art. And I haven't always managed to do that. But it's not really a writing skill. It's a negotiation personal skill. But I think a lot of like very successful writers do have that skill as well.
So I'm a young TV-obsessed wannabe writer dreaming of becoming a TV script writer. What's your top piece of advice?
I would just really try and write quite a lot of your own stuff. Like, not worry too much if it's the right thing to write. Just write your own stuff before you're in the glare. Just to find out what feels natural to you as your voice. Because I think people often start writing and they're writing in the style of someone they admire. Just kind of get some stuff out there so you can kind of find what your voice is. So you've got a couple of things that you can show around. Because some people actually get onto shows without doing a lot of that. Like, you might get onto a show like EastEnders or something else, like a continuing drama, and do a couple of years on that and then want to move off. But they haven't really got that thing that is really their voice and they don't really know what their voice is. And obviously your voice changes. So I think that is quite good to do, just to produce quite a lot. You can throw it away if you don't like it, but just produce quite a lot of material, just get a sense of that, because then that gives you a bit of a touchstone and some confidence. And also people know who you are. Because actually I think a lot of producers really like to just respond to something deeply in the writer. They just like to think, like, oh, that really chimes with me. I want to go and spend 2 or 3 years trying to get this thing made, or working with this person rather than this person's just a good fit for this. I think. So I think that's quite good. And then, as you've said, jump in and take some risks and know you're going to make some mistakes. It is amazing to me, like people, both good and bad, who have ups and downs, and you think, oh, they're never going to write anything else, and then they come back. It is a bumpy ride, I think, television writing, but bad things can happen. You can not get made, you can be sacked off a project, all kinds of things can happen. I think people do kind of come back and survive those things. So I think you can afford to have some knockbacks, and obviously this is a cliche, but just kind of keeping going, you know, quite an important thing. And then also, again, like maybe just writing on shows that, as you said, like aren't necessarily naturally what you'd thought about when you started, because you can get even something like EastEnders or those kind of shows where they're making lots of episodes, because there aren't many around now for people to write on. I mean, if you look across the spectrum of soaps, probably like a big chunk of the really successful writers now, like Russell T. Davis and Sally Wainwright, all started on those things. They did a year or two on those shows. A lot of writers. And so I think it is worth people dipping into something and just getting that hands-on experience of writing something, seeing it on television, doing another one, dealing with notes, dealing with producers, awkward personalities, people you like, meeting script editors, then become producers in 2 years. Just being in the mix, really. I think that is worth doing, even if it isn't naturally what you were drawn to, rather than thinking, I want to make this. I mean, it's really good to have your project and be determined to make it, and you've got your voice and something to say. It's absolutely essential. That's why you should be writing your own stuff at the beginning. But I think being willing to just try different things.
Excellent advice. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Down. Thank you.
We aim to reflect the views of a wide variety of authors on our podcast, but their views are, of course, their own. Check out more episodes of Authors Matters wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time. Goodbye.